youth pastor and his wife, and we're so glad to have you here. This is your first opportunity to preach to our group, and we're excited about that. Can I pray for you?
Absolutely.
Dear Heavenly Father, I just thank you so much for Nathan. I thank you for Andrew. I thank you, Lord, the journey that you've had them on, and I thank you that you've brought them here along in that journey, and I don't believe that's by accident. Lord, I pray, Lord, their life would be a blessing to the teens, to the kids of this church, Lord, to this entire church. Lord, I pray that you would speak through Nathan this morning. May our hearts be open to that. In Jesus' name, amen. Take it away, man.
Amen. What a perfect way to start. Good morning, everybody. I am super happy to be here. It's been a really exciting time getting to know so many of you already. For those who don't, like Pastor Matt said, I'm Nathan. I'm the new youth pastor here. Came here from beautiful Alberta, which is probably 10 degrees out there right now. So we are loving the life out here with the 26 degrees afternoon kind of thing. And so, yeah, this morning I'm really excited to get to share with you guys, because I don't want you guys to just like hear another regular message or anything or like something like that. I want you guys to get to know me. And so I know there's so many of you out there, and that I like getting to share my story with each one of you might take a little bit longer than a Sunday morning. But I want you guys to know me a little bit, so you get to share my story with you, a little bit of my testimony. There's a lot to it. There's been a lot of years. And so I'm just going to cover a little bit of portion of it, and then we can go deeper into it if we get to hang out sometime, which I would love, and it'd be awesome. And so I was born in Edmonton, Alberta. I grew up in a small town called Sylvan Lake, if anybody's heard of Sylvan Lake. It's a beautiful, okay, I hear. It's a beautiful little town. Grew up there. I lived there for 20-some years, and then I moved to Edmonton to go to Bible college. And so my dad was a children's pastor when I was growing up, and he was a pastor at the local PAOC church there. And we had an amazing time growing up doing that. See, this was the time when puppets and flannel graphs were the thing to do, and so I was hoping to get a response, because I know some of you know that. So we had a good time growing up with that. We also had Veggie Tales and Larry Boy, and I'm hoping someone knows what 3-2-1 Penguins is. Yes, there we go. I remember I was in college, and I actually looked up on YouTube to see if I could watch one of the episodes, and I didn't. It was just as funny now as it was then. And so some really good times. And so my childhood and into my preteen years, I was pretty heavily involved in the church. I was going to Sunday school every morning, and then when I graduated Sunday school, I went to what my siblings and I would call big kids church. And so we got to go and experience what it looked like to be in that kind of experience. We got to see the worship on a whole different level, hear the messages on a whole different level, see a whole bunch of different people doing different things. And so that's kind of what it was like for me growing up in the church. It was a cool experience. I loved it. It was just kind of something I would go to and go home. That was it, a day in the life of Nathan on a Sunday. Go to church, sit with his parents. My dad would tickle me in the service to try and make me laugh so that I could make a fool of myself and make a loud noise, and so always on guard there. But this became my routine as a kid, I guess as much as a routine I could have. And so everything was just kind of doing that. And so for this time, coming up into those preteen kind of years, I was homeschooled from grades 1 to 6. And I loved being homeschooled. I got to wake up late. I got to do my homework on my own time. Like, there was nothing wrong about that. But then it came to the time when I had to go to public school. And so from grade 6 to 8, I got to experience the social world for the first time. Oh, right. I always forget to say this. For those who don't know, I'm a triplet. It's one of the fun facts about me. So, you know, if you know twins, there's the three that are born. So I guess I can really say my mom is the MVP of this story because, you know, three kids at once, and I was not a small child, as you can see, so she had to carry quite the weight. So, Mom, if you're watching, MVP. But anyways, so going into public school, I got to experience many different things all at once. It really was a culture shock. I saw kids with cell phones, kids with vastly different mannerisms and personalities, and then this was probably one of the weirdest ones. There was kids with wheels in their heels of their shoes, and they were skating around the hallways. I was like, oh my goodness, this is a whole different world I'm looking at. And so all of this kind of hit me like a truck. And slowly over those 3 years of middle school, I began to act and follow some of these kids. I wanted to fit in, and I'm sure a lot of you can attest to that when you were going through school. It's like, yeah, especially when you come into public school, especially going from home school, it's like one of the biggest things you want to do is for people to know you and people to see that you're like, oh, they're one of us. And so that was my goal, is to try and fit in with these people the best that I could. And I was actually trying my hardest to do that. And so as I went through this, I actually began to fall into some pretty nasty habits. And this was just at the grades 6 to 8 stage. So I was a pretty young kid. And so obviously the influence is pretty high around that age. And so I started to fall into these poor habits, bad habits, and I wasn't too proud of it. Nothing too majorly bad or anything, but my goal was just to be a part of the crowd. And especially not having going to public school, like there's very few people that knew me. There was only one person in my public school that I actually knew who I went to church with. And so I was like, I gotta do something. But the more I progressed through these years, I began to not like the person that I was becoming. And so come the end of grade 8, that was probably where I was kind of at my lowest, and I was like, and I'm young too, so it's like I'm noticing these things, and I'm picking up on these things, and I go, Mom, I can't do it again. I do not want to go back to public school in grade 9. Throughout my life, I also dealt with a lot of separation anxiety from my mom, and that influenced it as well. Like, I had a hard time doing sports. I remember my mom would come and sit outside the classroom when I was going to school because I just couldn't be away from her, so it was like kind of a serious thing. So I was like, I just can't do it anymore. I want to take a break. I want to come back. And I kind of want to get more involved in church. That was my goal, just to be a little bit more Christ-centered around myself. And that was just in grade 8 that I was making that decision for myself. And so I went back to homeschool for a year with that hope and that feeling. And sure enough, it began to work. Because this whole time, as I'm making these decisions, those bad habits I was falling into, there was this ripping inside of me, this tension. I was like, what is that? I can't, like, this feeling is not good. It almost made me like want to puke sometimes. Like I just was not having a good time with it. And I was like, I don't know what that is. And it's not making me feel good at all. So that was a part of the goal of me going homeschooling as well. And so after going through homeschool in grade 9, things were working out okay. I began to go back to church. Well, I was going to church the whole time, but I got a little bit more involved in the church, tried to understand the Bible a little bit more, read it a little bit more. And that's when I'm in grade 9. And it was working. These feelings just kind of dissipated, but I didn't really recognize what I had done to make those feelings disappear. It was this general plateau of my life, just, okay, let's even out a little bit. And so coming after into that another homeschool year in grade 9, the schooling portion, that's where I kind of fell downhill. My brother and I, all we wanted to do was play video games the whole time. And so I remember on our little laptops, we would have a little video game on there, and we'd be playing it. And if I heard our mom coming down the stairs to the basement, it was switch it as fast as you could, get back to the schoolwork. And so obviously we did not continue with homeschool. Our mom sent us right back to public school because she didn't want to deal with that anymore. And so back to public school. And, you know, I was kind of more excited this time to get into public school because now I didn't have to worry about, you know, that feeling I still had. I was like, all right, I'm a new person. I can start fresh again. And so I went back to public school, and probably within the first 2 weeks, I fell right back into those habits. I met with my friend group again that I hadn't really seen all that much over that grade 9 year, and it was just straight back down to where I was acting. And I want to get a little bit more into what that acting looked like. And for a lot of the things that my friends wanted me to do, and a lot of those feelings, it involved me becoming this big bully. And it doesn't sound like anything too major, but what I did was major to me and major to the person I did it to. You see, it wasn't physical bullying, it was a lot of verbal bullying and mental kind of manipulation I would play on these kids. I was a smart kid, so I didn't want to physically bully because then I could be caught for it and then they would be able to see it, but the verbal part was a little bit more sneaky on that side. But the only reason I was doing it is because my friends just wanted me to. And I wanted to fit in, so why not just do that? Like, it made sense. It was the easiest way for me to fit in. And I remember pushing a kid so hard to the point of the room, they ran out of the room crying. And so I don't tell you this with joy. I hate the things that I did, and I hate the person that I was. I was driven by anger, but an anger I couldn't understand. And I remember I would get into screaming fest with my sister over meaningless things. I'd scream at my mom for no reason, all the people that were close to me. It was just this battle, and I didn't know why. And all the while, that feeling in my system, it wouldn't go. That tension I told you about, it was there constantly, and it was wearing me out. So again, those are most of the details as far as my school career goes. And after high school, a lot of this changed because, you know, you graduate and people start going their own ways. Friends start going to school. They start different jobs. And so I was in that position again where I was in grade 9 thinking, now what? And during this time, I had a whole reflection period of what my life looked like through the past grade or 12 years of my school life. And it sucked. I realized how much of a tornado I had been, the damage I'd done to myself, to my family, to others. And it was just a tornado that wouldn't let up. Something had to change, and I knew it had to change. I couldn't do it anymore. I was wearing thin. If you picture like that last thread on a blanket that split in two, that was me. Because I had hurt so many people, and I thought that to myself, and it just kept weighing down on me, and I couldn't take it anymore. And so that last part of myself, I didn't recognize that it had been affected, because I knew my mind and my heart had been beaten and been shamed by what I'd done. The last part of myself I didn't recognize that was affected was my soul, the part of myself that I neglected, rejected, and disposed of the most. My connection to God. You see, his connection to me, it was still there. He was still wanting me. That was the tension. That's what I couldn't figure out. He was still there, wanting my life, desiring my life, whereas I had neglected and rejected anything to do with that. But I still was in the church, still searching for it. You see, my life was for my own wants and desires. The desire to fit in, the desire to let other people like me the most. That's what it came to. There's a lot more to my story, but this is where I want to pause it. This is where I kind of want to leave it. And because we're getting to the best part, and I know you know what that's going to mean, but I want to just kind of anticipate it a little bit more. You see, I grew up my whole life in the church. So what was I missing? You see, I checked off all these boxes of what it meant to be a good Christian. I got baptized. I accepted Jesus into my life. I was doing all these good things. But why? Why was I feeling this way? Because everything I had heard to this point, everything I heard about Jesus, was I was hearing that he was someone who was supposed to help us, be there for us, who's our provider, our protector, this Savior. But I wasn't feeling like that was anything had anything to do with the Jesus that I was knowing. I heard all these things, but I wasn't believing it. I wasn't feeling it. And in this moment, this was my weakest time in my life. I broke down, I fell to the ground, and I was bawling, and I was weak. I was weeping, and I'm like, God, what the heck? What is going on? Why am I like this? Why am I feeling this way? I'm trying to become better. I'm trying to do better things. And this is the moment. Because I was sitting there, filled with my anger, reflecting on how many people I had hurt, people that I don't even remember their names. So I can't have any form of apology to them. I can't go to them and say sorry. And as I'm sitting there in my worthlessness, as I felt, all the anger, the hate, God told me one of the most confusing things I've ever heard in my life. A moment where his Spirit had grabbed my heart. And if you can picture scales falling off like a snake, or a snake peeling his way through his old skin, that's what it felt like to me. And this is what God told me. The most confusing thing I've ever heard, and one of the few times I've actually audibly heard God speak to me. He said, Nathan, I need you. I need you. Wait a minute. Wait. God is saying he needs me? The person who had hurt his children. God needs the person who is filled with hate, filled with anger. What does that mean? Because if I was thinking about being like a coach on a football team, why would I pick anybody like that? I don't want someone who's going to cause my team to fail like that. I don't want someone who's going to be a liability to the team. So as he said this to me, I'm like, that makes no sense. What am I? Who am I? I'm just this waste who has hurt God's children, filled with anger, with hate. I truly am worthless, and there's nothing I can be used for. And that's when my heart peeled. And I got, and this was the coolest part, because for the past 18 years, I knew God, I knew about him, I heard who he was, but for the first time, I met Jesus. And he grabbed me, and his Spirit invaded my soul, and he grabbed me, and he said, I need you. You are mine. And this is where I decided it was time. It was long overdue. It didn't become a want. It now became a need for me to go to God, to go to him and accept what he had for me. I needed him in my life when he was the one saying that he needs me. And this is where Jesus comes in. The most important choice and part of my story comes into play where I want to bring our focus to today. And I want to take you through this choice and what Jesus says about this choice that I had made. And so to do so, I want to start by reading from Luke chapter 9, 18 to 20. And it reads, "One day Jesus left the crowds to pray alone. Only his disciples were with him. And he asked them, 'Who do people say I am?' Well, they replied, 'Some say John the Baptist, some say Elijah, and others say you are the one of the other ancient prophets risen from the dead.' Then he asked them, 'But who do you say I am?' Peter replied, 'You are the Messiah sent from God.'" To give a little bit of context to this verse, you see the disciples, they were brought with Jesus to a private place, an intimate place, because he was with the crowd, but then they went to pray alone. And the disciples were with him. And you see, Jesus asked these two questions, and they're very interesting, because the first question is, what do other people say I am? And the second question is, who do you think I am? And everyone around would have been saying who Jesus was. You see, even in Luke's account of the gospel, what we hear about Jesus, we hear from the demons, we hear from the angels, we hear from the heavens above who Jesus is. Jesus accounts to himself, the demons account to who he is, the angels account to him who he is, and now we get to see the individual account to who he is. The disciples in an intimate experience with him, because a lot of times when Jesus would go pray alone, he'd go by himself. But here, it was with the disciples, the ones who were desperately trying to learn about God and be close to him and learn about him with the opportunity to as well. And in the same sense, I had heard my entire life about who this Jesus was. It was all this surface level stuff to me because I heard that I had to get baptized, so I did. I heard I had to accept Jesus into my life, and so I did. And so all these check marks I was checking off, I was doing the right thing, and I was doing it. And so now when Jesus asked me, "Who do you say I am?" I was stumped because I thought I had answered it already, but I didn't, because there's more to the story. He wasn't just asking for another answer of who he was. He was asking me to answer that he was who I needed. And what does this look like? What does that choice entail? That the disciples, when they answered, right after Peter answered Jesus, Jesus tasked us with three different things. But before I get into that, I'm going to read the next verses that are right after this. And you see, Jesus says in Luke 9, 23 to 26, "If any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way, take up your cross daily, and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake, you will save it. And what do you benefit if you gain the whole world, but are yourself lost or destroyed? If anyone is ashamed of me and my message, the Son of Man will be ashamed of that person when he returns in his glory and in the glory of the Father and the holy angels." Now it was the next step, to take a step further in my journey, a step in my story that I was desperately trying to find, but I couldn't recognize. That tension building in me, it all led to this, all led to what Jesus was talking to with his disciples, the missing link to me fully knowing God instead of merely talking about God. And it's easy for us. It's easy for us to come here and put on that show, because that's what I did. I did it for every single grade. And I was young, so it's like, oh yeah, every kid does that. But is God not asking all of us to do this for him? That question wasn't just asked to Peter. He asked all his disciples, but Peter exclaimed back to him. So it's a thing that God is asking each one of us. So it doesn't matter how old you are or how young you are. It matters about how much you need him, how much you desire to need him, how much you want him in your life, and that's what I was missing out on. I was in this half-in, half-out relationship with God. And so to know God, to follow God, Jesus tasks us with three amazing things in these verses. The first one is to give up your own way. Isn't this the hardest thing to do? As I was writing this out, I had this little story pop, not even a story, just this little idea pop in my head. Imagine walking to Subway. You walk to the counter, and the guy's like, okay, I'm going to make your sandwich for you. He walks down the thing, puts all the lettuce, all the tomatoes, everything you on there, and I was like, wait a minute, I didn't ask for that. That's not what I wanted on there. I don't like olives. Like, I didn't want that on there. But then as you take that sub and you eat it, it's the best thing you've ever had. Like, I don't know how else to describe us. Like, that's pretty much us giving up our own ways. what you decided, what you wanted, it might not be exactly what God is wanting for you, but it becomes the best thing you've ever had. And so, but to seriously think about it, Jesus requires us to give up our own ways, to follow the ways he set out, a beautiful plan and a beautiful story. We live in this world, and we've mentioned it so many times, and it's so fitting that this came to my head as Matt has been talking about the past 3 weeks about the world and the lies we believe in it. We live in this me mentality. That's what this world is, unfortunately. It's like, how much money can you make? What's the fanciest car you can drive? The biggest house you can have? It's so possessive, and it's like, you got to show yourself to be the best person. And that was me too. As a kid, even through high school, I was like, I need to get the best brands to look the best. I got to do this because that's what my friends want. That's what they're desiring for me. And so to give up ourselves, to give up our own ways, it requires us to take away that self-absorption. Everything that we think is just the best part about ourselves, to find ourselves and find the worst part of ourselves. That's where I found God. To reflect on who I truly was as a person. Not what the world was telling me, not what my friends were telling me, but what God was telling me. I need you. And I keep coming back to that because those words changed my life. When we follow our own ways, we're denying everything Jesus has told us to do. When we desire what we have and we pursue that with everything we got, that's not what Jesus asked of us. And we read it here. Give up your own way. It's just like that. I had no clue I was going to be living here today. Why would I move to where the Canucks play? Like, are you kidding me? I'm an Oilers fan. Like, seriously. Why would I do that? Yeah. No, I love it because this is where God has called me to. But to follow that, I didn't know I was going to be here. I didn't know I was going to graduate college. I did 4 years in college. I didn't know I was going to do all that. I didn't know I was going to be married today. None of this had aligned with what I thought was going to happen. None of it. And now I get to stand here because this is the place God has brought me. And so, as I saw through my high school career, every time I followed myself, it brought me back to the same place. The place where I was on the ground, weeping, bawling, hating myself for what I'd done. And I kept following that. Like, you think it would be an easy choice to give up, but that's because of how much I cared about me. Me. And so, that's the switch that needed to happen in my mind. These wants and desires were separate of what Jesus was asking of me. And this leads us to our next task, which might even be the next hardest task we have to do. Because Jesus tells us to take up our cross daily. And so when we hear this, your mind might go to where mine goes, thinking of Jesus going to the cross. That image, and that would have sucked. Like, people spat at him. People would whip him. Like, that is not a pretty sight. As he's taking this cross up to a one-way road. And when the disciples would have heard of Jesus saying this, when they would have heard him say, take up your cross, they would have pictured that same thing. Because in the New Testament, every time this would be done, it was a one-way street. You would take up your cross to sacrifice or to die. That would be it. That's the only thing that the cross was meant for. And so when Jesus says this, to take up your cross daily, Jesus is asking us something super serious. He's not asking us to die for everybody's sins, because that was already done through him. Well, what would have been done through him as he was talking to the disciples. What Jesus is asking us to do is to take his name to the very end. To the very end. Time is a weird thing. It only moves one way. And so my life, in the 24 years I've been alive, that's a long time. Okay. I'm not saying anything. In the sense of just how long has been passed, to think of how not long I've carried his name. To say since I graduated from grade 12, the longest I've carried his name is probably only around 7-8 years. To seriously say I've carried his name, to take up his cross. To take the cross was a hardship task. You had to be ready to face scorn and attacks from people. And that's not what normal life says it's going to be. Normal life says that we're going to have an easy time. and like not necessarily, but normal life shows us that you can make yourself have an easy time. Make as much money as you can. Build your retirement early. That happens, and that's an awesome thing to have. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but that's what society is telling us to do right now. Whereas sometimes you're going to be walking for the next 5 years through the worst hell you've ever experienced. And that happens too. I've known people who have lost people out of the blue. Andrea's been telling me that she's known a lot of people who are just like, people are just passing away suddenly. Like, how do you live with that? How do you deal with that? How does your self-desires make that any better? It's hard. It's serious. But this is where I was as a kid who just graduated high school. So that shows you that everybody could be at the stage no matter where you are. And so when Jesus asks us to take up this cross daily, it's a serious thing because the cross is heavy. So it's not always going to be easy sometimes, but you know who's waiting at the end. And you know who is ready for you to take you in. That's where I was missing because I was just in the now thinking. It was like, well, I'm not feeling that great right now. It's not helping me all that much right now. But it's, again, walking through the darkness, not stopping in it to say, oh, what's happening here? It's walking through it, continually walking through it to that light. And it might be carrying the heaviest cross you've ever had to carry, but it's for Jesus' name. Through everything we face, as hard as it gets, Jesus wants us to live for him. Each one of us is going to walk through something different in light. It might be similar to other people, but that's the cool thing. Because just as Jesus was talking to his disciples, that shows that he wasn't telling one person to take this cross alone. It was everybody. A family of people. So that when you're walking that cross, there's 400 people walking it right next to you. They're with you. We're with you. So taking up the cross intensifies the idea of giving up ourselves. And it's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. But now we understand the worth to be unparalleled. The cross represents sacrifice. A sacrifice, like I said, it's a one-way street. It can't return. We got to give up some things of ourselves. Something very interesting about my high school friends is when I graduated high school, I had seen what they'd done to me. These were my closest friends, my best friends. I had to give them up because of who they were making me to be. That was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do because I had great times with them. I have great memories with them still. But when I came to Jesus, when he said, I need you, it became easy to give it up because now my mind wasn't so stuck with like, how can I keep all this stuff and still be with God? It became, how can I be with God and see what stuff is still there? Because God is the most important thing we could ever find. And I'm up here saying that because that's how I truly feel. I'm up here because I'm saying, guys, girls, find him. Find him. And it might be hard sometimes. You're going to walk through some nasty stuff. But now we get to the best part. Because now Jesus says, follow me. And the disciples, more than anybody, got to follow him the most. They were with him all the time. So what I love about the Bible, and Pastor Matt's talked about it a lot of times too, the New Testament, it was written in Greek, and the Old Testament in Hebrew. And so what that means is the Greek words that were originally used to write the Bible are very specific in what they mean. And we can, as scholars read them and interpret them, they can tell us exactly what they mean. And the follow me, that sense, the verbiage behind it is continual. It can't just stop. When I was in grade 9, it stopped. I stopped myself there and said, okay, check the boxes. We're good to go. It stopped. When I got out of high school and I was still trying to figure things out, there was times it would stop, times it would continue. And now I'm here walking and it is a continual thing to follow him, pursuing him, loving him, surrendering to him, all of it. We can't be half in and we can't be half out. And it's not even for the sake of just being totally for him. It's for the sake of what it'll do to you. It's going to hurt to be half in, half out because your body, like mine was it'll be tearing in the middle and it's going to hurt. By me pleasing my friends and partly living to please God, that's what it was. then I had to make the choice to fully follow God. So worship team, you can come on back here as we look to close up soon. And now Jesus goes on to say some more things. He says, those who wish to hang on to their life, they will lose it. But those who lose their lives are saved. This, again, is us having to give up on ourselves. And like I said before, this can be a really hard thing. For me, I cared so much about myself. I needed myself to still be there, because if I didn't have me, I'm lost. Where am I? Who am I? I'm holding on to all these different things. And so it's an ironic thing to hear that when we try and hang on to our lives, we're going to lose it. But for those of us who hold on to Jesus, let go of our lives, that's when we're saved. And this is what I've come to know over the years, that our lives mean nothing if it is not for God. Because what do we have without Him? The nice house, the nice car, the nice devices, the nice clothes, all these different things. What is that going to mean? But with God, we got it all. Through the Old Testament, we see countless promises that God made to His people. We get promises where we find hope, where we find joy, we find love, we find wholeness. We find the kind of wholeness that a growing man needed to find when he was constantly angry, when he was tearing God's children apart. A wholeness that makes broken hearts mended. Something that I've had to, something like a major conflict in my mind of what does love mean? Do we really know what love is apart from Jesus? Can we really know what love is apart from Jesus? But it's Him and through Him that we find all this. And the only thing that gets in the way is ourselves. That's it. Because we hold on to our life, we lose it. We let go, we gain it. We gain who we're supposed to be, who we've been meant to be. I got in the way. I thought my choices and everything were exactly where they needed to be. I marked off those good check marks. I marked off those good boxes. But I missed the entire mark of what it means to follow God. And so as we move into this song, I want to encourage you that if you've been searching for a long time to find God, longer than me, longer than anyone else, it feels, that discovery doesn't have to wait any longer. It can happen right here, right now. Expect it to happen. You see, we give up ourselves, we take our cross, and we follow Him. Why wait? Why play around with your life in the sense of like, oh, you know, I'll be okay for the next couple months. What happens when you're not? What happens when you find yourself in my position on the ground as you're weak and you're lowest, crying out to God, screaming to God, why is this happening? We've all been there. And if we haven't already, who knows when it might happen. But this is the beautiful time that we get to search our hearts and find where we stand with Him. The prayer team just could come to the front. I just want to create an opportunity for us to discover where we're at with God. If that looks like you just individually taking some time to yourself to sit in your seat and just say, God, where am I with You? Do I need You as much as You need me? Because He may not necessarily need all of us. He does. I'm not saying that He doesn't. But what I'm saying is that feeling of Him needing you that saved me. Him needing me, it saved me. So wherever you're at, we want to pray with you. We want to spend some time. And so if you're not comfortable even coming to the front, talk to us after. Find us, connect with us. That's why we're here, because we get to be a family and work through this together, to journey this together. You may have only known me for a month, but God's known us forever, so we get to experience it all together.